Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Bucks podcast, joining you when basketball, college basketball, is top of mind right now here in the throes of the NCAA tournament. But we know you're thinking about the Milwaukee Bucks as well. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the podcast, and joining me on the other line is Matt Velasquez, Journal Sentinel beat reporter covering the Milwaukee Bucks. And Matt, we got some real life adversity here. We've talked about like the back to back losses out west that spooked everybody a little bit, but now for the first time, I think it's safe to say the Milwaukee Bucks are facing, I would classify this as their first really significant obstacle in the 2018-2019 season. Injuries to Malcolm Brogdon, Nikola Mirotic, both for some amount of time. Brogdon likely to miss at least the first round of the playoffs, maybe more. Then you see them lose two out of three. They definitely struggle in Cleveland. They're unable to beat Philadelphia at home. I guess for starters, just give me your state of the Bucks right now. They've got a really tight amount of players available, just eight players available, and it looks to me like the Bucks are kind of in a, I don't know if a crisis point is the right thing to say, but this is a tough time for the Milwaukee Bucks.
Yeah, they are definitely hobbling to the finish right now. For everybody who can at least walk, some guys like can't even really get around that well. You just got so many injuries. They're 5-5 in their last 10. They've lost two out of the last three. They're definitely. I can't think of a much more adverse situation that they've been in this year. I know that in late November they were alternating wins and losses for a couple weeks, but they were able to right that ship in a pretty clear way, and they weren't dealing with a ton of major injuries. I mean, like you mentioned, like Malcolm Brogdon is going to be out until at least second round of the playoffs. Nikola Mirotic, Bud threw some water on the fire, saying that he expected Mirotic back before the playoffs, not within the 2 to 4 week recovery time that had been projected and reported. But he thinks he'll be back in time for the playoffs, which is positive. There's about 3 weeks to the playoffs. And then Yanis Adekunbo tweaked that right ankle on Sunday against the 76ers, and brought the Pfizer form to a total standstill. You hear a pin drop in there as he lay on the ground and grabbed his ankle, and it was in obvious pain. But he was able to get back, finish the game, look like himself. Though immediately afterwards, he said it was kind of the adrenaline that took him through it, and he was calling for somebody to bring him like a sleeve, something to compression sleeve to put on his foot. To help that ankle feel better, and he's missed two games since, and with them losing one of those games with again most of the team out with injuries in Cleveland, obviously I got some people panicking, especially because the Raptors won that night against the Oklahoma City Thunder in Oklahoma City. Now they're 2 games back of the Bucks, but remember that means they're actually 3 games back of taking over the first spot in the East, because the Bucks do own the tiebreaker, having won 3 of 4 against the Raptors this year. There's 10 games left. The Bucks are 2 games up. They've got a whole bunch of guys out. Maybe Sterling Brown comes back later this week, possibly as soon as Friday, though maybe by Sunday he'll be back. That's what Mike Budenholzer was projecting on Tuesday, saying that Sterling Brown has been playing 5-on-5, been getting better, and should be able to return to the rotation soon. I'm not sure about the extent of Pau Gasol's left ankle soreness, but you would hope that soreness as opposed to a sprain would mean that he could return sooner. And Dante DiVincenzo is kind of just up in the air with his heel bursitis that's been bothering him for months now. They really are hobbling, as I said, and it's going to take a pretty serious effort over the last 10 games to hold off the Raptors.
7 of those 10 games will be at Pfizer Forum. That starts on Friday night against the Miami Heat, that team that, again, right now, if the season ended today, the Bucks would be playing Miami in the first round of the playoffs. This will be the last chance to preview Miami a little bit. They got 2 games against the Hawks, which is considered a much lesser opponent at this point. Another game against the Cavs, even though the Bucks just lost to the Cavs, but this one will be in Milwaukee. A couple games against the Nets. You got the Rockets, Clippers, Thunder in there as well. So it's not the easiest of schedules, but it is not an unkind schedule either. The injury stuff, I feel like, has just been creeping on the fringes. We haven't been super concerned about Sterling Brown being out, because as good as he's played this year, he hasn't been a central player. Same for Dante DiVincenzo. Even when you lose a guy like let's say Mirotić, you know that he's probably not going to be out for the playoffs, and he's probably he's still somebody you could theoretically live without. I don't know about Malcolm Brogdon. We talked about how important he was on the last podcast. Huge contributions in a lot of different ways. And I do feel like they have been missing something in the couple games we've seen without him. Now, it's unfair because they've also been without Giannis for two of those games. But if this team doesn't get Malcolm Brogdon back, I know that we think he could be back by the second round of the playoffs. If he can't come back, what is this team going to have to do to overcome the absence of Malcolm Brogdon?
You know, I think obviously getting Mirotić back will help. Having him shoot the way that he did against the Lakers and generally play the way that he did will help. I think Tony Snell has struggled a little bit over the past couple games. Hasn't shot the ball well, got into crazy foul trouble against the Lakers. Getting him into a rhythm in whatever role he's going to have, whether it's starting or off the bench, will be good. I think he can kind of make up for some of Brogdon's three-point shooting for sure. He's shown a proclivity for driving the lane a little bit more than he used to. In no way is he doing it as much as Brogdon or as proficiently as Brogdon. But if he can keep defenses honest by, you know, pump faking, being able to drive the lane strong, they've looked for him a bunch on out of bounds plays, driving baseline, because most teams are so worried about him in the corner that they'll bite, and then he can just drive baseline for an easy bucket. You know, and of course, like getting Sterling Brown back, you know, he's definitely not Malcolm Brogdon by any stretch of the imagination, but you know, he is, you know, a sniper from the corners. I mean, he's put up crazy good numbers on corner threes a lot of this season. As long as his wrist is back to full health and feeling strong, you would expect that he should be able to get back to somewhere close to where he was before he got hurt. And being able to have that threat, he's also a physical defender. You know, he can drive the lane, you know, pretty well. Not as well as Brogdon. No one who's replacing Brogdon will bring exactly what Brogdon does, considering he's 50-40-90 before he went out. You know, but having Brown back, I think, will be a positive boost. You know, and I think that all signs indicate that Brogdon will be back around the second round of the playoffs, whether he's ready for the start of the series or, you know, has to come back in the middle of it or a couple games in, you know, remains to be seen. But there's a lot of positivity around his ability to get back. I don't think that this is the difference between the Bucks making the second round and not making the second round. I think with four of their five starters still available, you know, with Giannis being healthy in the playoffs, I think no matter who they get, whether it's the Heat or the Nets or the Magic or the Pistons or whoever it ends up being, you know, I think they can handle that team in a seven-game series. You obviously don't want it to go very long if you're the Bucks. You want to get it out in four games or five. But if you have to, I still don't see a situation where the Bucks aren't going to make the second round.
Yeah, we'll talk a little bit about the playoffs a little bit. You mentioned that Oklahoma City win where they almost blew it, or I should say Toronto win over Oklahoma City. Toronto almost blowing it on Wednesday night, but then pulling it out in overtime. They're not exactly lighting on all cylinders either, but I want to talk about this Sixers team that's starting to get scarier and scarier. But I'm already burying the lead, having talked so much, and you have brought up Giannis's health, but this is the, you know, he sat out back-to-back games, and for the first time, he's been nicked up to this point in the season, but for the first time, there's some concern about whether or not he's, you know, when he's going to play again. It does not appear that his ankle injury is serious enough at this point to hold him out for a long period of time, but they've got this game against Miami that's somewhat important and a couple games in a row after that at Pfizer Forum. Is it possible that this ankle could hold him out for an extended period of time and then, you know, doing so could threaten the Bucks perch atop the Eastern Conference standings?
You know, I don't think it'll keep him out a long time. You know, that's just me guessing. That's my gut feel. I mean, he warmed up before the game in Cleveland on Wednesday. So, I mean, that's a positive sign. He didn't do that on Tuesday. He didn't get out there at all before the game against the Lakers. So having him get out there, get some shots up, go through his normal pregame routine to then be, you know, called off basically and said, okay, no, we're going to sit him anyway. You know, that just means he wasn't 100%. He couldn't go. They didn't want to take that chance. I think coming home, you know, with the Heat coming in, I think we're likely to see Giannis. I think that they've given him, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday to kind of get over that that injury, and I think he should be okay for Friday, because that's just me kind of guessing from the outside. I wasn't in Cleveland, and they won't have practice on Thursday, so I won't have any really solid update on that. But it just seems like, you know, the prognosis looks pretty good, just by watching him warm up and watching him. You know, he's on the bench, he's getting up, he's moving around. So you'd hope he'd be able to get back. And I think that just as a competitor, I think he's going to do everything he can to get back, because he doesn't like seeing his team lose at all.
The last time we saw Giannis, he was dropping 52 points against the 76ers. That's the most by a Milwaukee Buck since 2009. Oh, shout out Brandon Jennings. But that was just a crazy singular performance. And again, that is the game where he tweaked that ankle, and we again have not seen him since. I hope you were able to sell your courtside seats for that Lakers-Bucks game, that LeBron-Giannis matchup that definitely did not happen. How about that? You get through that okay?
Yeah, I mean, that was fine. It was a little bit of a bummer. You want to definitely see two of the best players in the world go head to head whenever you have the opportunity. But we made it through.
Bucks able to win without Giannis against the Lakers again before the back-to-back falling in Cleveland. But to go back to that Sixers game, the Bucks didn't win. 130-125. The Sixers looked really good, and that was just a good performance by them. They have been playing well lately. A couple hiccups that we've talked about in the last podcast, but they beat Boston on Wednesday night. Joel Embiid talking about how he is the best player, most unstoppable player in the NBA, and even though Bucks fans have a quibble with that, he's playing pretty well, and you could see how good the Sixers could be. The more I watch them play, the more I am concerned about them as a potential Eastern Conference Finals foe. And we did sort of break down that matchup last week. But now, as we get closer, is that the team that, if you're looking at Toronto and Philadelphia, are you seeing Philadelphia as the more dangerous team at this point? Because that's kind of what I'm perceiving based on what I've seen.
Yeah, I mean, right now I think that Philly's looking really dangerous. They could be a second round opponent. I mean, it's not impossible for the Bucks to drop to the two seed. I mentioned at the top that we're in a situation where you see the Bucks two games on the Raptors, which means that they really are up three games since they have the tiebreaker. But the Raptors have a pretty easy schedule from here on out. I mean, they've got. They've got the Oklahoma City Thunder at home on Friday, a team that they just beat on Wednesday in OKC. After that, they don't play any more playoff team. They play one more playoff team for the rest of the year. Two playoff teams for the rest of the year at Brooklyn and home against Miami. So they've got home against Charlotte and Chicago, at New York and Chicago, home for Orlando, at Brooklyn, at Charlotte, versus Miami, and at Minnesota. You know, that's a very... That's a very winnable schedule for the Raptors. Obviously, they'll probably have some load management days baked in there for Kawhi Leonard and Kyle Lowry and things of that nature. But they should be able to clean up pretty well with that schedule. And the Bucks, they're going to face a tougher test, at Philadelphia, home against the Clippers and Rockets. Even going to Brooklyn could be difficult. They have the Heat at home. The Bucks are going to have to do everything they can to hold off the Raptors, considering the way the schedules line up. And so it's very possible that the Bucks could play the 76ers in the second round. It's looking like, even though the Sixers are on a six-game win streak and really, really crushing it right now, they're pretty much destined for the three seed at this point. It's very unlikely that they would jump up to the two. Or any higher than that. And so the Bucks could be playing the Sixers in the second round, and that would be a really tough matchup. I think that Sunday's game, the Bucks really didn't play their best. Nikola Mirotic didn't bring much of anything shooting-wise. Chris Middleton was slow to get started. Brook Lopez was slow to get started. The whole team, outside of Giannis, really was slow to get started. Well, I guess you could throw in DJ Wilson making three threes in the first half. But I don't think anybody was in double figures at halftime other than those and Giannis and Wilson. Third quarter didn't bring that much of an improvement before they really made a push there at the end, led by Giannis, to make things interesting down the stretch. I think that, you know, one thing the Bucks generally did was I think they defended actually pretty well for stretches of that game, especially near the end. Just Jimmy Butler was making tough shots. Joel Embiid was making contested shots. I mean, J.J. Redick was 7 of 10 from the floor. So the Sixers shot really well, regardless of what the Bucks did on defense. And so maybe they don't do that every time, of course, but, you know, Giannis isn't going to go 52 and 16 every time either. So they're going to need some support from other guys if they're going to, you know, challenge and beat the Sixers. I think it'll be fun to see those two teams lock up again on April 4th in Philadelphia, a game that I think the Bucks are going to be, you know, up for, to say the least, and really want to, you know, make a statement knowing that they could face this Philly team later in the playoffs. So definitely a tough matchup. And I'm looking forward, like I said, I'm looking forward to April 4th.
The Sixers are six games back of the Bucks in the standings. Not likely that they will need that tiebreaker, but they could still procure it with that regular season win. Correct me if I'm wrong, I think the Bucks are unlikely to face the Sixers in the second round, because if they hold on to the three, they'll meet Toronto the two in the other sort of semifinal of the Eastern Conference. Bucks would be more likely to face Indiana or Boston at this point. And to me, that's definitely what they want. There is a clear demarcation, it seems, between Bucks, Toronto, Philadelphia, and then the rest of the league. Even if the records don't show it, it seems like there's a clear top three. So ever more important to get that top seed if you are the Milwaukee Bucks. We've had some roster shakeup in the minor roster shakeup since we last chatted.
Oh, how dare you? How dare you call that minor?
Oh, yes. I apologize. I do love Christian Wood as much as the next guy.
There are large segments or at least loud segments of the Bucks fan base that are crying shame on you.
Forgive me, guys. I love Christian Wood as much as the next guy. I did my 68 degrees of separation, the link between every school in the NCAA tournament and the state of Wisconsin. That's on jsonline.com. And I was disappointed that Alabama didn't make the field, because Deontay Wood is Christian Wood's brother and is on the Alabama roster. And I was like, this is a perfect connection, because everyone loves Christian Wood and they probably don't realize his brother is on a tourney contending Division I team. But then Alabama didn't make it, so it didn't matter. And then Christian Wood isn't a Buck anymore, so it would have been doubly disheartening. And I do know people love Christian Wood. And maybe, you know, the decision to bring in Pau Gasol was celebrated so much at the time, and nobody could have foreseen that he'd be hurt necessarily, but you wonder now how things would have changed if they had waited and taken a guard, because they lose Malcolm Brogdon for the year. They become shorter in their guard rotation. They have to go and get a Tim Frazier, and that it comes at the expense of Christian Wood's roster spot. I'm sure there's some financial considerations there too, why Christian Wood would be the guy let go and not like a Bonzi Colson or somebody on a smaller contract. But it seems to me that the Pau Gasol thing hasn't really worked out, and then one of the consequences is losing Christian Wood. I don't know if that's an unfair direct line to draw. How would you classify all of that?
All right, yeah, a lot to unpack here. Let's start with Pau Gasol. So when they brought in Pau Gasol, Malcolm Brogdon was healthy, George Hill was getting healthy, and on his way back to the roster, the lineup. Sterling Brown, they thought, was getting healthy. Dante DiVincenzo was days away from returning. So it looked like all of their guard situation was set. You know, they had their starters. They had, you know, George Hill just a couple games away from coming back. Dante DiVincenzo just a couple games away from coming back. Sterling Brown still on the mend, but, you know, looking promising. So, you know, they had a ton of guards. Like, there was no shortage of those guys. So they bring in Pau Gasol because they didn't have a true, like, 7-foot, like, backup center to Brook Lopez. And so they wanted to do that. That's where they went. They also got Pau because, you know, he is a former champion, an all-star, just somebody who's been on the block before, a veteran who can, you know, be a positive presence in the locker room, all that type of stuff. You know, and that was, you know, March 4th. And so, you know, then we have, you know, Dante DiVincenzo comes back, plays a couple games. Now he's back out again with the bursitis in his heel. Okay. George Hill, I think most of him missing Wednesday night was probably planned, considering that he's just coming back from that left groin strain. And he, was still playing limited minutes. So playing on Tuesday night and then having the back-to-back was probably something that they had expected would happen, not wanting to really push him too hard in the back-to-back. And then Sterling Brown, he should be coming back soon. So, you know, but having Brogdon go down, Mirotić goes down, you know, not having George Hill for the second night of a back-to-back, DiVincenzo's like hurt again, Sterling Brown is almost back, but not yet back yet. You know, they needed another guard, and that's what drove them to waive Christian Wood. And why Christian Wood? Well, you know, they really didn't have too many other options in terms of guys who aren't guards. You know, they need Pat Connaughton, they need Tony's, you know, all these other guys. Like, not that they're gonna waive Tony Snell, he's still very much under contract and they'd be eating a lot of money. But you know, Christian Wood is he was the last guy to make the roster in training camp. He has a lot of guys ahead of him. He's not going to play. He was never going to play in the playoffs because just so many guys ahead of him with Giannis and Mirotić, DJ Wilson, Ersan Ilyasova, Brook Lopez. There's just too many guys. Pau Gasol might not play in the playoffs. Like, there's a very real possibility of that, like not playing significant minutes. So, you know, Christian Wood wasn't going to play going into the future. I think it wouldn't look good to drop Pau Gasol. It also doesn't save you really all that much money, considering they just signed him. That'd just be a bad look. And so they made the decision to, and they can't waive Bonzi Colson because Bonzi Colson's on a two-way contract, and the deadline for signing new players to a two-way contract was January 15th. So if they waive Bonzi Colson, they literally can't add anybody else. So that's just a waste. And also, you know, Bonzi Colson, Trayvon Duval, they're not eligible to play in the playoffs. So that wouldn't help things anyway. So they made the tough decision they really had no intention of making at any point before now, of waiving Christian Wood. You know, the downside of that is that they had him on a very team-friendly contract. He has a non-guaranteed a year next year. So they could have they guaranteed his contract in January. So they wanted to keep him. Like, they didn't commit to paying all that money so they could just get rid of him right now. So they committed to paying out his contract for the full year, and they had his rights for a non-guaranteed year next year. And they just decided that they needed the guard more. And so they decided to waive him, bring in Tim Frazier, somebody who they liked in training camp, who was with them for all of camp up until the last cuts, spent most of the season with the New Orleans Pelicans, before getting waived on February 28th, which by being waived at that time allows him to still be playoff eligible for his new team. And then one, I guess, silver lining of waiving Christian Wood was that, you know, he will get a chance to actually play. And he was picked up immediately off waivers by the New Orleans Pelicans. And so he will join the Pelicans for the last 10 games of the season, be able to show them what he's got. And by being picked up off waivers, the Pelicans now take the cap hit for Christian Wood instead of the Bucks. And so the Bucks, where they had been right up against the salary cap or the luxury tax, and if they had gone to the finals, won the finals, Tony Snell would have gotten a roster a bonus for that progress, and they would have gone into the tax, which I guess, like, if you win the finals and like you have to pay the tax, like, I think every Bucks fan would be fine with it. I think the Bucks organization would be fine with it. But by virtue of waiving Christian Wood and having him actually be picked up off waivers before he cleared waivers and became a full-on free agent, you know, they don't have that cap hit anymore, so they are in no danger of going to the tax this season at all. And the reason why New Orleans would do that and take the cap hit is, one, they had room to take the hit. Two, they wanted to see, you know, what Christian Wood could offer them. And three, now they actually get to keep Christian Wood on the same contract that he was on. So, you know, they'll pay out the rest of this year, which I think comes down to, like, you know, $129,000, some small amount of money for this year. And they have him all summer and non-guaranteed for next year in case they want to keep him. So at the end of the day, if all these injuries hadn't, you know, happened all at the same time, Christian Wood would still be a Buck. I don't think they wanted to move on from him, but the injuries forced their hand and they had to make a tough decision. I think, you know, Christian Wood, even though he didn't spend a lot of time with the Bucks, he played a lot with the Wisconsin Herd. I think the people in the Bucks front office, their franchise, in the locker room, everybody liked Christian. Everybody thought that he was a positive influence, a good citizen on the team, and he gave it his all. It's not easy to have to go back and forth between Milwaukee and Oshkosh and be living the G League life for a lot of the year when you thought you would be living the NBA life after getting that full season contract. But he handled it well. He played really well in the G League, and they kind of just had to wish him well. And, at least in his case, he got picked up and he'll still have a chance.
Random question I just thought of. Is he driving himself back and forth up and down Highway 41 when he goes from Milwaukee to Oshkosh? Does he have anybody take him? I'm picturing Christian Wood just hanging out on Highway 41 all day, but the number of times he's gone back and forth. How do they get the Bucks back and forth?
No, we had there was a story a few months ago from our sister paper in the Oshkosh Northwestern. I guess that Vin Baker actually does a lot of accompanying guys who are going up and down between the G League.
Yeah,
and
Vin Baker.
Driving back and forth with him. He's kind of like the assistant coach who's like the liaison and who helps handle that. So I don't think Christian's driving himself. It might be Vin driving, or they might have a car and just go together. One of the two. As far as I know, he's not driving himself.
All right. That's just a fascinating thing I hadn't thought of. And yes, that story, I believe Margaret Nachek wrote that for the Oshkosh Northwestern. Definitely give that a check out if you did not read that a little while back. Would be easy to find through the Google. And disappointing for sure, because Christian Wood was sort of a great story coming out of, coming out of the start of the season, coming out of nowhere. But he continues the synergy with the New Orleans Pelicans. I believe they released Jason Smith, former Buck, this season to make room for him once he was claimed off waivers. And of course, Mirotić came from the Pelicans. Anthony Davis mentioned the Bucks this year. So the Pelicans and the Bucks, they sort of have this thing going for 2019. Probably the end of it right here, though. I'm not sure there'll be much more after that. Two quick hitters before I let you go. I can't leave the petty horn in the in the stable for long, and we have an opportunity to use it here after during that Sixers game. Mentioned that earlier. The Bucks, Giannis threw down a dunk over Ben Simmons. Seemed to call him a big baby, and then Simmons came down the other way and dunked on him. It was a delightful moment. You know I love the petty horn.
Petty. Petty. Petty.
But were you surprised to see Giannis react that way? That's a little uncharacteristic for him. I know he's like slowly but surely becoming more of that Giannis that we know of, with a scowl on his face, the aggressor. But usually you don't see him doing stuff quite like that.
Yeah, no, I was glad the cameras caught that. Because he does have that competitive fire. Like he's not just this like competitive, like super nice guy. Like he's going for the kill all the time. He had that game earlier this season where he said, "I'm the MVP with the word before MVP," after a big play. And that's something that like what Russell Westbrook does a lot, where if he backs a smaller guy down and scores in the post, he'll rock the cradle. That's definitely a good use of the petty horn, but he'll rock the cradle on a baby. So that's what Giannis did there. He caught on the block. He backed down Simmons, and he dunked right on his head, and he got fouled. So I think that in that moment, Pfizer Forum was rocking. He was feeling it, and he's telling his team. He didn't call it straight to Simmons' face. He did turn away, and he was telling his teammates, "Hey, like FYI, that guy's a baby." But after the game, asked about that situation, he was like, "Yeah, no, it's easy. Like, with Joel Embiid on me, he's one of the best defenders. Like, I'd rather be on Ben Simmons like all day." Like, that's which, there's some reasonability to that statement. It makes sense. Joel Embiid is 7'2" or whatever he is, and he's a monster, and he makes things really hard, and Ben Simmons is not as large and not as scary. Would you rather try to post him up? Absolutely. Giannis was hunting those switches. He even admitted, he said, "Hey, I was trying to get switches and get off of Embiid," and he did that very well, because the Sixers were leaving whoever was guarding Giannis basically one-on-one and choosing to stay out on the Bucks shooters. And so Giannis is like, "All right, one-on-one, who's going to stop me?" And apparently not Ben Simmons. Though, like you said, he did get his retribution at the other end, following up an Embiid miss by going over Giannis's back for a dunk. It wasn't at the same level of disrespect as Giannis backing up Simmons, dunking out his head and calling him a baby. But, I think if that were me, I'd be pretty happy if I were in Ben Simmons' shoes, saying, "All right, I didn't let that get me down for very long. Oh, and by And by the way, like, hold that L. Like, if I were Ben Simmons, that's how I would handle it.
Petty.
You know, petty. And I'm totally here for petty. the one-on-one, you know, insults, the pettiness, the high level intensity. I think as I saw the video of Giannis saying that, because they were going to the basket, coming towards us in the media section. So when he said that, he was turned away from us. So I didn't see his face, but seeing that video, I was like, oh man, this needs to be a playoff series. Like, let's go. I don't care if it's the second round. I don't care if it's the third round. I have no investment in what round it is. I just want it to happen because these teams will go like for the throat, like at all times, and it'll be fun.
Hold that L. I love that. And Ben Simmons quickly becoming one of the 10 best players in the NBA too. But you're right. Much easier to throw it on a dunk over him than it is over 7'2" Joel Embiid. Maybe on a more serious note, we've mentioned the name DiVincenzo a couple times on this podcast, and it's rapidly looking like I don't know for sure if we'll see him again or not, but you know, he has been a non-factor this season, and after the early returns, I don't think anybody saw that coming. And I think the bigger disappointment is not really knowing what DiVincenzo is going to be able to bring to the table next year when this Bucks team could be without Malcolm Brogdon. We didn't even talk about what this injury does to Malcolm Brogdon's long-term prognosis and his, you know, availability on the open market after this season. But, you know, there's some decisions that have to be made. Lopez, you know, Middleton, Brogdon. And it'd be nice to know what DiVincenzo could provide. What is your take on what comes next for him? Let's say he doesn't play again, because even if he does, it's going to be sparingly. Where does he fit long term for this Bucks team?
You know, I think that they have high hopes that he can be a guard off the bench. You know, if they can keep their starting lineup together, you know, obviously those guys are going to stay starting. But if he could be a productive rotation player, you know, we've seen him be productive in the rotation this year. The problem is that this injury has really kept him out. You know, he played a handful of games after coming back from a 2-month layoff, you know, but then immediately was back, you know, hampered by that heel. It's something that he's never dealt with before. There's a certain level of pain tolerance that he, you know, is dealing with, and you know, they don't want to further injure it. You know, he's told me before that when he's been playing, that's not when it hurts. It's afterwards that the soreness and the pain really comes in. And they kept him out of action for over 2 months. They had him in a walking boot to try and alleviate some of that pain. And obviously, you know, that hasn't gotten to the root of the problem or solved the problem. And so, you know, just from hearing Mike Budenholzer the other day, it seemed like they might be slowing Dante down. You know, for maybe an extended period of time, at least for some period of time, to try and figure out what they can do to alleviate that pain and actually deal with the problem. And, you know, that might mean we don't see him a lot for the rest of the season. Hopefully, you know, he can get right before the season's over and be able to contribute and play and bring something off the bench. But at the very least, hopefully over the summer, he can really take the time, get the rest he needs, get the treatment he needs, and be able to come back and you know, be injury-free in 2019-2020.
He is Matt Velasquez, Bucks beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Read everything he has to say at jsonline.com, whether it's a breakdown of an injury situation, it's Brook Lopez rescuing a basketball from the top of the standard. Hero Brook Lopez. He's at just about every game, and we'll give you a ton of great stuff on the Milwaukee Bucks. Thank you, Matt. Thank you for joining us. We will talk again soon. We are getting into playoff mode here, buddy. It's going to be a fun finish, maybe a limp to the finish, but it's going to be a fun finish.
Oh man, I can't wait. I'm ready for the playoffs. Let's get these 10 games done, and let's get to playoff time.
Find us on Stitcher, Spotify, or Apple iTunes. I guess it's Apple Podcasts now. But give us a rating, review, let us know what you think. Find me on Twitter. I'm JR Radcliffe, at JR Radcliffe, with an E on the end of how you'd expect it to be. Matt Velasquez is Matt_VELAZQUEZ. Let us know what you think, and thanks for listening. We'll chat with you again next week. Take care.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.